سلام.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم، بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم، والصلاة والسلام على خير المرسلين وعلى آله وأصحابه أجمعين، ولا حول ولا قوة إلا بالله العلي العظيم. سبحانك اللهم لا علم لنا إلا ما علمتنا إنك أنت العليم الحكيم. So, welcome back. This is actually now class 28 for those who are new. We've been going through quite some time, but alhamdulillah, bit by bit, we've gone through aqidah, we've gone through tahara, we've gone through prayer, we've gone through fasting. And now we're in the section on zakat. Last time, we talked about zakat on crops and things like that, which is quite interesting. And I mentioned that I think we need to be getting back to having that sort of wealth as well as simply monetary wealth. Now we're going to talk about the two remaining forms of zakat. Most of today will be relating to zakat on what's called nukud or naqd. This word, the naqada, is a word that literally means to critique something or to separate the bad from the good. But it came used to mean money because money is like separating the thing that people attach value to from everything else and then using it as currency. So when you see naqd, that's what naqd comes from. And naqdain usually means gold and silver. The two naqds, the two forms of money. Or the plural, nuqud. So this section relates to that. He said, Ibn Abi Zayd al-Khayrawani rahimahullah, وَلَا زَكَاتَ فِي الذَّهَبِ وَلَا زَكَاتَ مِنَ الذَّهَبِ. So he starts with gold and silver. And gold relates here to the type of gold that you pay zakat on in the Maliki Madhab is gold which has been turned into money and gold which is in its original form, such as, or has no use attached to it, such as in the form of a gold bar or a gold nugget that's quite pure in terms of its gold content, or, for example, something that you're not allowed to own. So a gold ring for a man would be counted as money because he's holding it as a form of wealth, or gold plates and gold cups and things like that because you're not allowed to use those for your eating and drinking. Things of that nature would all be considered to fall under the category of money in this case. But no, gold jewelry that is allowed to be owned and which has been bought by a person, he's going to come to that later, which somebody has bought with the intention of personal use, even if it's only going to use it once, like for their wedding or something, or with the intention of renting it out, i.e. not with the intention of selling it, then that, there's no zakat on it. If you own zakat purely as, with no intention ever of using it, purely to hold your wealth, and you're basically using it as a form of currency and trying to escape zakat by having it in that, and so then that would be, have zakat on it, because you're not intending to use it. But intending to use it just once is enough. So he says here, there is no zakat on gold, fi aqalli min 20 dinar. In less than 20 dinars. Now, a dinar has a weight which is called a mithqal in Arabic, which is 72 grains of sha'ir, of barley, which in modern weights is approximately, there's some variation, but obviously sha'ir itself has some variation. But they've worked it out between 4.25, 4.3 grams approximately of gold for each dinar. Doesn't have to be pure. Simply has to be what's used for currency. So you don't say, oh, this is 22 carats, so then you divide it by 90% and whatever it is. You, if it's a dinar that's being used, even if it's less than the size that's mentioned here, but it's being used by everybody as a full dinar, or even if it's bigger than this, but it's being used simply as a dinar, that counts as one dinar. This is when dinar is being used. Now we're in different circumstances where people don't use this. Now we revert back to the weight. But because they actually in ancient times, such as in the time of Imam Nafrawi, who did his sharh on this, the Fawakih Duwani, in his time, the dinars that they used were considerably smaller. So 23 of the dinars of his time were the same weight as 20 dinars at the time of the Rasul Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam. So in those circumstances, because it was a considerable difference, like that's what 20% or whatever it is difference, they actually did it by the weight. So their nisab was 23 dinars because it was down to the weight. But if it's a little bit less and people accept it in the shops as if it's a full dinar, or the, in the market, then you just do it by the number of dinars. So that's the general methodology that we use for this. And sometimes even if they're not as pure, so say it's only 18 karat in one particular place, somebody's mixed it a little bit with smelted it and then mixed it with a bit of some other material like copper or whatever. So it's got the same color, but it's slightly less pure. Even in those circumstances, what tended to happen was that people would, if people accepted them in the shops or the marketplace, then you would just consider it to be a dinar, even if it's slightly adulterated. But when it's completely adulterated, the people stop accepting it, then you have to look at the gold content again. فَإِذَا بَلَغَتْ 20 دِينَارًا فَفِيهَا نِصْفُ دِينَارٍ. When it reaches 20 dinars and you have also passed your year of possessing that thing, then, and this is a lunar year, the moment it reaches 20, you pay on the entirety that you have. So it's not like tax thresholds, where basically when you reach 20,000 a year, you pay one threshold on everything above 20,000 until you reach 30,000, then you pay everything. No, you pay this on everything that you have. So if you have 19 and a half dinars, you pay nothing. If you have 20 dinars, you pay half a dinar. So you effectively still have 19 and a half dinars. So basically, that's the way it works. And then every dinar or every part of a dinar that you have above that, you have to pay zakat on it. So even if you've only got 20 and a half dinars, you have to pay a 40th of that half dinar. That's the way it works. So he says here, fiha nisfu dinar, there is a half a dinar on it, which is rubu ushur, which is a quarter of a tenth, a 40th. Fama zada fabi hisabi dhalik. And everything that goes above it, you use that same calculation of a 40th. Wa in qal, even if it's only a little amount. Okay. It's always on the total that you have, so long as that total has been in your possession for the hawl, for a year. Yes. There, well, not necessarily always, because there's two types of ways that money comes into your possession. What's called fa'ida and what's called ribh. Now, ribh is probably the easy one to explain, is profit. So if I have 10 dinars, I buy a car with it, and then sell that car for 20 dinars. If I had that 10 dinars in my possession in Rabi al-Awwal, and that 20 dinars was in my possession in the following Rabi al-Awwal, I haven't had 20 dinars in my possession for a full year, have I? Because it was started out as 10, but that 10 is considered to be within that, the extra 10 in the 20 is considered to be within that 10, the possibility of it, because it's profit through business. So it's considered that I've had it in my possession for a year. So even though it hasn't actually been in my possession for a year, the potential of it has been in my possession for a year. So then you would pay zakat on the 20. That's riba. The second one is what's called fa'ida, which is every other way of getting money apart from through business. So inheritance, gifts, wages, anything else. That basically the principle is it doesn't get added to anything before it. So if I have 20 dinars in my possession in Rabi al-Awwal, and then one day less than a year passes, and I inherit 1,000 dinars, and then the next day comes, I've got 1,020 dinars in my possession. But you don't pay zakat on 1,020 dinars, you pay zakat only on the 20. That 1,000 dinars, you wait until one day before the next year. So it's been in your possession for a year. Every fa'idah has a separate date, which can make things complicated when people receive their money as wages. So then he says, "Wala zakat min al-fidda fi aqall min 200 dirham." There is no zakat on silver in anything less than 200 dirhams. And they use various different terms for all of these things. Like they use different weights to explain things to people in the books of fiqh. They'll use different volumetric measures, and they use all of these different ones because they know that people in every place had different terms that they use for how you work out the weight of something or the volume of something. So here they don't know maybe what the exact size of a dirham is because people used to have different size. Even now, people have different size dirhams, or you The word dirham comes from drachma, which was the coin used by the Greeks. So even in those times, maybe the drachma of one place was different from the dirham of another place. So then he has to define exactly what is meant by a dirham here. So he says here, a dirham is dhalika khamsatu awaq. So an awqiyah is another measure they used to use. And he says here, wal awqiyah arba'una dirham min wazni sab'a. This is a specific type of dirham that they used to have 40 of them equaled an awqiyah. And 200 dirhams is thus five of these awqiyahs. And he says here, an awqiyah specifically relates to the dirhams that have the weight of seven. What does that mean? This means that basically 10 of these dirhams have the same weight as 7 dinars. So basically, each dirham is 7/10 the weight of a dinar. So he's working it out based on the weight of the dinar here. And we just said the weight of the dinar was about 4.3, which they basically then work out the weight of a dirham being approximately 3 grams, more or less 3 grams, 7/10 of the weight of a dinar. Those were the official dirhams. And 10 of those dirhams in zakat terms equals 1 dinar. But they are, each one of them is 7/10 the weight. So that means basically the difference in value between gold and silver was considered to be 1/7 the value of gold. It's now about 1/70. Things have changed considerably in terms of the markets. But classically speaking, over history, it was always within that sort of range. Sometimes it might go up to 1/14, but it was always sort of like between like a fifth and something like that. It always varied, but it didn't vary like it does now, where it's 70 times. They were because if you and if you look at the relative amounts of these various metals, that makes sense. The 70 times does not make sense. So it's obviously that's being done by people deliberately manipulating the price. A lot, 10 times less valuable. Whereas gold is pretty much probably similar value, or if not more in some cases. So he says here, he says, "Ani, I mean, and the sab'a dananir waznuha 10 dirham. I mean that 7 dinars have the weight of 10 dirhams. Balagat dirham, ushuruha. If you have dirhams and those dirhams are above the weight, are 200 dirhams, they reach 200 dirhams or more, and they've been in your possession for a year, then you give a quarter of a tenth, in other words, a 40th again of them, which is khamsatu dirahim, which is 5 dirhams. So every 200 dirhams, you give five. Fama zada fa bi hisabi dhalik. And if there is more than that, you use the same calculation, i.e., a 40th. So if you have 240, you would give six. If you have 280, you would give seven, and so on. If you have 260, you would give 6.5. So what happens if you have 10 dinars for a year and 100 dirhams for a year? That's all you have. You pay zakat or not? Yes, because they combine. They join together. So if you have if you have some gold and some silver for the purposes of zakat to work out how much zakat you pay, you combine them. But that doesn't mean that you can pay in whatever you want. For the 100 dirhams, you should pay in silver, and for the 10 dinars, you should pay it in gold. But for the purpose of working it out, they combine. It's the same with crops, as I said. If you have 300, we were saying liters more or less last time, 300 liters of wheat and 300 liters of barley, then you would pay half of it in wheat and half of it in barley, even though they both add together to reach the 600 threshold that we mentioned last time. فَمَنْ كَانَ لَهُ 100 دِرْهَمْ وَعَشْرَةُ دَنَانِيرَ فَلْيَخْرُجْ مِنْ كُلِّ مَالٍ رُبُعُ شُرُوهُ. So if you have 100 dirhams and 10 dinars, you pay from each of those currencies, gold and silver, a 40th of it, like I said. It's quite simple. ولا زكاة في العروض حتى تكون للتجارة. There is no zakat on non-cash goods. This word ard, you'll see it mentioned in the books of fiqh a lot, is often used to either mean something that's not ayn, which is gold and silver. So anything which is not ayn, you often see it translated as merchandise or trade goods, but it's more than that. It's any household possession or anything that you have that is not cash. Or in some cases, it's used to mean not food. So that you have ta'am, which means usually staples, like wheat or something like that, and ard being separate to that. So in those cases, it would mean anything which is non-food, non-cash. But that's the word ard generally means that. So we talked about crops before and animals. This is anything here which zakat is not being paid on, which is in your possession, which is not got the ruling of cash. So I mentioned things that have the ruling of cash, so you know, gold and silver plates and other things that you're not really allowed to have. that's counted as cash. Anything other than that is called ard. Can include land, can include houses, can include loads of things. وَلَا زَكَاةَ فِي الْعُرُودِ حَتَّى تَكُونُ لِلْتِجَارَةِ. So no urud have any zakat on them unless they are for the purpose of tijara, of trade. So let me give you a scenario here where you, I'll see if you actually can work out the answer. If I am given a car, I've already got a car, and then I say, okay, right, I'm going to sell this car. Do I have to pay zakat on that car when a year has come later?
Sell it or before you sell it?
Before I sell it. Because basically the condition here of certain types of goods that are for tijara, like I have a shop. I buy and sell daily. I buy stock in and then I sell it. And then come the end of the year to work out my zakat, what I do is I look at all my stock and all the money I have, and then I add that all together. And the stock, I have to take an estimated value for it, which is based upon the going market rate. Yeah. So that's what I mean here by ard litijara. My question is, if this car is given to me and then I put it up for sale immediately, is that considered to be that type of stock or not? And the answer is no. Anything which you have to, for it to be considered to be stock for trade that you have to zakat, it has to be something that you buy with the purpose of selling, not something that's given to you and then you immediately decide to sell it. So it's very important to know that distinction. So he says here, فَإِذَا بِئْتَهَا. Oh, this is selling it, but you have to actually have also bought it in order for it to count as trade goods. If something is not a trade good, something which is simply yours, and then you think, oh, I've had enough of this, or, oh, I need some money, I'm going to sell it. Such as you've got a couple of houses maybe, and you want to sell one of them suddenly, or a spare car, or a computer, or anything else. That it's not specifically part of your trading stock, but it's just something that you might sell on Gumtree. Then here he says here, إِذَا بِعْتَهَا بَعْدَ حَوْلٍ فَأَكْثَرْ مِنْ يَوْمِ أَخَذْتَ ثَمَنَهَا أَوْ زَكَيْتَهُ فَفِي ثَمَنِهِ الزَّكَاةِ. So this is for trade goods. He says, if it's something which is not a trade good and which has any element of personal use in it at any time in its history, then there's no zakat. If it is a trading good, then when the moment you sell it, after a year has passed of you having it in your possession. So I talked before about stock, which is the shop. Now he's talking about a different type of trading. He's talking about when you buy something and you look at the market prices and you think, this is quite common now. But I think that in 3 years' time, a lot of people are going to want this. So you put it aside. You don't sell it. You wait for the market to change. You wait for the price to increase, and then you sell it. That's called ihtikar in Arabic. It's not always permitted. It's permitted in certain types of things for which there's no need. If there is need, such as food, or things which are basically sold on a day-to-day in the marketplace, then it's actually forbidden for you to do it, because that's basically hoarding. And by doing that, you damage the people of that place because you change the prices artificially. So you're not allowed to do that type of hoarding. But when it's a good that people don't need, let's say one that they commonly do it with diamonds, they hold back the diamonds in order to increase the price when they sell them at a later time. There's no actual harm in that. Maybe, if you've got a monopoly, then that's a separate issue. But if your thing changes the price and it's not something which needed, there's no harm. So that's what he's doing here. You have bought something to sell, let's say a car, and it's a model that everybody has. But you realize, having looked at the thing, that this car is going to be all the rage in 2 years' time. So you hold it back and then sell it then. Now you've had this car for 2 years. What happens with zakat? Because you bought it for trading it. Do you have to pay it every year and estimate its value? No. Only with stock that you put up for sale immediately. That's what's called a mudir. Huh? You only pay it once as if it's like a debt when you sell it. So he says here, if you sell it after a year or more has passed from the day you took possession of its price, in other words, the day you paid for it, or from the day you paid zakat on it, if it's something that you paid zakat on, فَفِي ثَمَنِهِ الزَّكَاةِ لِحَوْلٍ وَاحِدٍ. You pay zakat on it for a single year only, even if it's 20 years that's been in your possession. You only pay 1 year's zakat, even if it's worth 1,000 times the level of zakat at the point you pay it. You only pay 1 year's zakat. أقامت قبل البيع حولا أو أكثر, whether it's been in your possession before selling it for a year or more, إلا أن تكون مديرا, except if you are what's called a مدير. I said a مدير is somebody who buys stock and puts it up for sale immediately, even if that price that you get is actually going to be a loss sometimes. But your business is based upon constant turnover. So basically, somebody whose business is based on lots of turnover, sometimes they will sell things at a loss, sometimes they'll sell things at a gain, but it's a constant process. This other person is somebody who buys rare goods, holds on to them, and sells them.
Same thing as you pay with this average. Got.
Yeah, nothing to do with the value. It's to do with the price. The price that you get, nothing to do with the value. Whereas stock, you do value it based upon what you were expected to receive of that stock for that stock. That's for somebody who has constant turnover. Sometimes people don't have constant, you have some problematic things like somebody who has a carpet shop where they buy carpets. And in order to sell carpets, sometimes you need to have a lot more carpets in your shop than you're ever likely to sell. Sometimes you might have 1,000 times what you sell in a year in your shop. So that's a bit of a problematic situation. And in those situations, maybe you do where you pay zakat as if he's a muhtakir. Because zakat's not there to impoverish people. Illa an takuna mudiran, where you have constant turnover. La yastaqirru biyadik, the things you buy do not stay in your possession. Aynan wala ard, whether it's the money that you have, you're constantly going in and buying new stock, or the ard or the stock that you buy in, it's constant flow, a turnover. Fa innaka taqumu urudaka kull aam. You to quote, sorry, fa innaka tuqawwim urudaka kull aam. You value your stock every year. So you choose your date. That date is not just something you choose arbitrarily. It's when you reach the first moment where zakat becomes obligatory on you, and then you pay it. Then that becomes your year, and then you do that same. So long as obviously you don't drop below that level in terms of the total value of your stock and stuff like that. You pay, you estimate the value of your stock, and then you add to that any money that's in your possession when your date comes around. And if that is above the level of zakat, then you pay zakat on it. And you pay 1/40th of everything based upon the actual funds and the value together. as if the value is actual funds. وحول الربح المال حول أصله. He's now he says the other one, the year of the profit that is gained from wealth is the year of the asl, of the original thing that you bought. So the original could be the original cash. So you basically have a slush fund or a fund from which you're going to buy things. And then that's your intention with that fund is for business. And then you go out and buy things with it and sell them and buy things and sell them. And then come the end of the year, your buying and selling has resulted in you being above the level of zakat from that particular thing, just that particular money. Then your year starts from when that original thing came in your possession, or when it was originally turned over to that use. Or it might be from when you paid zakat on money that you had before and then started to trade with it. That would be the original moment. But it's got nothing to do with it being a year from the threshold. It's a year from the original money or the original goods. Unless, of course, you inherited those goods. In which case, the zakat only starts from the moment you sell them. Then you start working out your year from then, not from the moment you put them up for sale. وكذلك حول نسل الأنعام حول الأمهات. He says here, so basically this is profit, and there's something which has the same ruling as profit, and that is when you have livestock. We're going to come to livestock later. And say you, at the beginning of the year, let's say you have 24 camels, and one of them is pregnant. Now, at 24 camels, you basically have to usually pay four sheep or four goats. The moment you get to 25, you have to actually pay a camel. Now, say in the course of that year, one of these camels gives birth to another camel. So now, by the time it comes around next year, you have 25. You have to pay on 25 because that is considered like profit in animals when they're pregnant. Extra animal has appeared in the course of that year. It was already inherent within, with camels, that makes sense because they actually have like a year-long pregnancy anyway. وَمَنْ لَهُ مَالٌ تَجِبُ فِيهِ الزَّكَاءُ وَعَلَيْهِ دَيْنُ مِثْلِهِ أَوْ يَنْقُسُهُ عَنْ مِقْدَارِ مَالِ الزَّكَاءِ أَوْ يَنْقُسُهُ عَنْ مِقْدَارِ مَالِ الزَّكَاءِ فَلَا زَكَاةَ عَلَيْهِ. If somebody has wealth that's above the level of zakat, say you have 30 dinars, you had it for a year, and by the time the next year comes, you also have a debt, you owe somebody 30 dinars. So at the same time that you have 30 dinars, you owe somebody else 30 dinars, which is the first scenario, basically as if you had no money. Or you owe somebody 11 dinars, which means that you effectively have 19 dinars when you reach the end of that year. He says, in this case, there is no zakat due on you. But it's not as simple as that. He's going to come to this in a sec. It's not as simple as that. إِلَّا أَنْ يَكُونَ عِنْدَهُ مِمَّا لَا يُزَكَّى مِنْ عُرُودٍ مُقْتَنَاتٍ. Except if he has possessions that are not zakat, that have not had zakat paid on them. So we're not talking about crops that have had zakat paid on them or camels that have had zakat paid on them. Possessions that have not had zakat paid on them, or raqiq, or hayawan muqtanat, or other animals that he owns, or iqar, or property, or ruba, or estates, or anything else, basically, that he could sell them in order to pay off that debt. So basically, if somebody wants to have his debts remove him from having to pay zakat, he is first treated as if he is somebody who is insolvent. Not literally, because you don't actually sell his things, but just to see whether the zakat will affect his ability to pay. You treat him as if he's insolvent. Now, what happens with somebody who is bankrupt or insolvent? In the deen, basically, that person owes people money. His debts are more than his assets, and he doesn't have the ability to pay. So you take all of his money, and he still owes. So what do you do? Basically, you take his possessions and you sell them. So you take any slaves he has. So he's not allowed to sell slaves or give slaves away, for example, because they have to be sold. Or if he has a house, he can't give it to somebody. Any gifts that you give while you're in that situation don't count. So basically, if he has a house that's bigger than his needs, say he's just him, and he lives in a four bedroom house, then that house would be sold, and he would be told to buy a cheaper one bedroom house instead. Or he's got a Ferrari. He doesn't need that Ferrari really to get around. Then you would sell that and buy a cheaper car. Only the things that he needs are left to him. So clothes for him, enough food for him and his dependents, enough clothes for him and his dependents, a place to live for him and his dependents. In some cases, if they're from a certain category, then a servant or a slave might be left to them if they are somebody who needs that. But I mean, he's basically stripped back somebody who is in this situation of being insolvent. So basically, what you do is you carry out that process without actually doing it for somebody who says, my debts stop me from paying zakat. Yeah?
Do you mean?
So you're not actually going to sell all his things. He's just telling you, I've got a debt of 30 dinars. I've only got 45 dinars. Surely that means I don't have to pay zakat because effectively I've only got 15. So he said, okay, well let's see. If you were forced to have to pay off all of your debts right now, what would happen? How much money you would actually have?
Is that to stop people like you could have like masses of accounts to say that you're in debt and therefore not pay exactly that kind of
Well,
thing?
no, it's basically well, it's nothing to do with that. It's just basically to see how wealthy people truly are at the end of the day.
It
Because
happens
basically,
to
zakat is on the rich. It's taken from the rich and given to the poor. If you have need or don't have need, if you are going to say I am no longer rich because of this debt, but in fact, that's not the case at all because you actually have more than your needs if you take away the everything that you've got as well as your money. I mean, talking about extras, not your base level needs, then you are still really rich. So you still have to, you're still. So basically, when somebody has a debt and says, oh, I don't have to pay zakat, you have to actually look at what else they have first before you can determine whether that actually cancels out their zakat. Quite important to know that.
if you took away the zakat from the money, you have less than the threshold, but if you've got a huge house, it would still pay.
No, I mean, if somebody's got a huge house, they're allowed to have a huge house. But if somebody has got a huge house and they've got 50 dinars and they've had it for a year, everybody knows they've had it for a year. And then they're coming and saying, look, I don't have to pay zakat because I actually owe somebody 30, 35 dinars. Then you're thinking, okay, all right. If this person only, let's take the 50 dinars out of the equation. If this person owed 35 dinars, what would we do in the situation of this person? What you do in that situation is you say, okay, he's got no money to pay, he's insolvent, so we sell his assets. That's what you do. And that's how you determine whether he can pay or not. So that's what you do there. Just ignoring the zakat thing for a moment, because he's trying to tell you that his debts are stopping him from paying zakat.
So he still then has to pay for this.
So basically, if the value of his house and the value of his car more than cover his debt, or cover enough of his debt that he still has more than above the level of zakat, then he would pay zakat.
He hits about 50.
Or however much was not decreased by his debt in reality. So maybe his debts would actually decrease it by 30 if you took everything into account, but he still have 20 and he pays zakat on 20. It's a process that you have to go through. There's some mathematics involved, some working out the value of things involved, and so on. So he says here, if you have any of these things that he mentioned, properties and animals, slaves, fine clothes, anything else that's basically beyond your needs, المال. You have to pay zakat on the money that you have because it's not a debt that stops you from having to pay zakat. فإن لم تفي أروده بدينه حسب بقية دينه فيما بيده. If his possessions do not completely pay off his debt, as I said, then you work out a calculation of how much the rest of that debt will take off of the money that he has. And if it's still above the level of zakat, he says here, فَإِن بَقِيَ بَعْدَ ذَلِكَ مَا فِيهِ زَكَاهُ زَكَاهُ. If it's still above the level of zakat, after that debt has removed from the amount, then you pay zakat on what remains. Is that quite clear? So this involves knowing what you do when somebody's bankrupt in this particular case. Probably the same sorts of things apply to bankruptcy in modern societies as in ifless in the classical Muslim situation. I think they may take even more of your stuff and leave you with even less now. Somebody can come in and basically take pretty much anything, can't they, these days? They send in the bailiffs, don't they? But you're not allowed to take away in the deen more than what a person has need of, and that includes himself and his dependents. So if he has 100 kids, maybe he needs to be able to continue to, then you can't take, maybe can't take very much away from him. ولا يسقط الدين زكاة حب ولا تمر ولا ماشية. If you have a big debt, say you have a debt of 100 dinars and all of your possessions are only worth 50 dinars, so basically you are bankrupt. You don't have enough. And you have a field and your crop from that field is above the nisab, which we said is around 600 liters in modern, for something like wheat. Do you have to pay zakat on that wheat or not? He says, yes, but debts don't affect, they only affect money. Debts do not affect any other form of wealth. So you can't say, oh, I don't have to pay zakat on my camels because I've got a debt. Or I don't have to pay zakat on my dates because I've got a debt. Doesn't work. Debts only impact ayn, which is gold and silver. Or that's the problem now. We have so many weird currencies that are not gold and silver. In fact, it makes the whole thing very, very problematic. So we have to basically take a position that these funny forms of money are in place of gold and silver, but there are problems in doing that. So what this is an indication of, because for some, everything must be in place. Zakat is one of the fara'id of the deen. So everything must be in place for zakat to be done properly, which is an indication that we have to sort out that situation with our currency. We can't just leave it unsorted. That's an obligation on us. It's as if no one has any money in reality. So basically, one of the ways you can view this modern money is this, as if it's a form of art or tijara, as if it's a form of stock or trading good, then you work out the value of it and see whether that value is above the level of gold and silver. But it's a problem. That's one of the ways you can do it in order to say there's zakat on it. Because there's no zakat on something which is called flus. And flus is one of the modern terms that they use for money in Arabic. But flus actually talks about what's called a fils. A fils is anything that's used as coinage that is not gold or silver. So it typically was brass or copper, sometimes lead, but it was, you know, nickel, other sorts of coins that they would use. And sometimes they would have value in one place and no value somewhere else because they would be specific to a particular zone. So Imam Malik's position was, even if a person, for example, has a bakery, and they sell all of their bread only in fils, in flus. So they accumulate huge amounts of this. There's no zakat on that as money. If it's stock, though, it can be considered a stock. So you might be considered as somebody who has all of this thing and then all of this bread that you would all add it all up together as stock. That's one way of viewing it. But it's not considered to be money in its own right. Money in its own right was limited to gold and silver for the purpose of zakat. Yes, it would have many of the. It did have some elements of being money, but not for zakat. So, example, Imam Malik said you shouldn't change 20 filths for 25 filths because it's some of the riba concepts work with it. But still, he didn't consider it to be zakat, to have zakat on it. وَلَا زَكَاةَ عَلَيْهِ فِي دَيْنٍ حَتَّى يَقْبِضُ. So we've talked about when you owe debts. What about somebody owes you a debt? There is some debts that you pay zakat on, by the way, before he's mentioning a type of debt here. But when we talked about stock, if somebody has a shop and they sell stuff every day, and sometimes they have people who have tabs. So somebody might not pay until the end of each month, but they might take out stuff. And say your stock taking or your working out your zakat is happens in the middle of a month, and half the people who will buy from you all have tabs and they haven't paid you yet, but they've taken half of the stock that they're going to take. You count the amount that they've taken on their tab as being paid for, even if it's a debt in that particular case. That type of debt, where it's always realizable, and you have a full expectation of getting it, and it's a constant thing like that, you would pay zakat on, as if it was paid to you, even when you don't have it. But there's another type of debt, which is a much bigger one. For example, I lend you 100 dinars. And then I tell you, you can pay me back in 10 years' time. And you're somebody who's trustworthy, and I expect that you're going to pay me back the 100 dinars. So what happens 1 year later? You've got the 100 dinars, but I'm expecting you to pay it back to me in 10 years' time. What happens with that 100 dinars after a year if it's meant to come back to me? Do I have to pay zakat on it or not? No, yes. So what happens when I collect it in 10 years' time? Do I pay zakat for each one of those 10 years? No, only for 1 year. What happens if he pays me back in 10 years' time 10 dinars of it, and then says, I'll pay you back the 10 dinars in another 6 months? Don't pay anything for the first 10 dinars. But when you've got to the level of nisab that he's paid you back, so 6 months later, then you pay on everything that you received. And then everything you receive after that, you pay zakat the moment you get it. So say he gives you another 1 dinar, then you pay zakat on that 1 dinar and you keep on paying it because you've reached the nisab and what's been paying back to you. These are the various sorts of things that apply with debts. I mean, it's not complicated, but it's things that you have to remember when they happen. There's lots of weird sorts of things in the modern world that you have to sort of fit them in somewhere. Say you buy stocks and shares, or you have a pension, or all of these various things. Where do you fit those in? Are they Could you consider that like a debt? Or how would you view it, and so on and so forth? Because, for example, a pension, you can't actually access it until a certain age. And then you can only access a certain amount of it in some, or in some, you can access all of it. But so there's all these things. In some ways, it is almost like a debt, but at the same time, you've been paying into it. So it's a very complicated one to work out exactly how it works. It could be you're like lending more and more and more, in a sense. Well, yeah, I mean, basically, what the profit is theirs, what they owe the bank, they have to pay back. So that's a debt that they owe. And whatever on top of that debt that they've made is their own money and it's profit. Yeah, well, and that's why we don't involve ourselves with riba, but basically, whatever the debt is at any one moment, that's what you might subtract to find out if you have to pay zakat after you've done all the thing with your assets, like I talked about. So he says here, وَلَا زَكَاةَ عَلَيْهِ فِي دَيْنٍ. You don't have to pay zakat on a debt that is owed to you, حَتَّى يَقْبِضُ, until you take possession of it. وَإِنْ أَقَامَ عَوَامًا, even if it is with the other person for many, many years. فَإِنَّمَا يُزَكِّيهِ, you only pay zakat on it. The Amin Wahid, for 1 year. Ba'da qabdihi, after taking possession of it.
Can you wait for a year after taking
No.
possession? As soon as you get it.
Yes. So long as it's been out of your possession, for more than a year, the moment you receive 20 dinars of it, you have to pay zakat. That clear? وكذلك العروض العرض حتى يبيعه. So he says the same applies to, as we mentioned before, to trading good, something that you've bought to sell. You don't pay any zakat on it until you sell it. You don't pay every year as with stock. وإن كان الدين أو العرض من ميراث, if the debt or the ard, possession that you are selling, is something that comes from an inheritance. So this often happens. Sometimes it takes years to sort out how to divide up an inheritance. So somebody dies, and they leave, say, 100 dinars to you. This is yours, theoretically, from the moment that person died. If it's, you know, something which is Allah has written for you. But sometimes the actual qasma, the division of this, is very, very complicated. Because, say, maybe it's in the form of a house or whatever it is. Or it's in the form of money, but there is, you know, trying to work out how to find all the people to divide it up, let's say, if it's in the form of money. This debt is owed to you, and sometimes it takes 5 years for it to actually get into your hand. In this particular case, he says, the same applies. But not exactly the same. You don't pay zakat for those 5 years, but you don't even pay zakat of 1 year when you receive it. Instead, you start your year from the moment you receive it, even though in some ways it was yours from the moment it was left to you. It's not actually yours until you take possession of it.
So it would be once you get it a year later.
Yes, only if you still have above
if
the
still have
above the nisab, yeah. But you start your zakat year from when you receive it, and you don't have to pay for the 5 years that, say, it took for the inheritance to be divided up, even though in a sense it was yours from the moment it was left to you. And the same, he says here, if you inherit something that you're automatically going to sell, you never want to keep it as your own possession. You left a car, you're not planning on ever using it, you're going to sell it immediately. This happens a lot. You know, a house is left to a group of people and they immediately put it up for sale. They don't care what price they get even. So it's not something they're holding on later until you get a good price. In that particular case, you don't start your zakat year from the moment you put it up for sale, as you would if you'd bought it and it was something that you were trading good. But instead, you don't pay zakat even if it takes 5 years for it to sell. You only start your year afterwards from the money you get. Yeah.
So you bought the house yourself intending to sell it, and it takes 5 years to sell. Do you just pay every year or 1 year?
Well, yeah, if it's something that you're just selling constantly, it's always for sale, then you would pay, you and it was something that you bought in order to sell, then it's stock. That's why I'm saying that sometimes it's difficult where you have stock that's extremely valuable. If somebody is trading hundreds of houses in that sense, but if somebody just buys one house, that can be quite a difficult position if they put themselves in. No, if you buy a house to rent out, there's no zakat on it. If you buy anything to rent out, there's no zakat on it. Even jewelry, there's no zakat on it. There's just zakat on the money. And that money is basically what's called fa'ida. Rent payments are fa'ida. They start, you start your year and you don't add them to anything before. It's like a wage. وعلى الأصاغير الزكاة بأموالهم في العين والحرث والماشية. The position of Malik was different to some of the others. He considered that zakat was due on wealth, not on just on people as the prayer. For example, the prayer, you only have to pay the prayer if, well, it's a combination of both in a sense. But he considered that people under the age of puberty have to pay zakat. Based on one of the hadiths of, or a statement of Aisha radiallahu anha, when she basically said, do not leave the wealth of orphans for zakat to eat it. Which is an indication that you have to pay zakat on the wealth of orphans, And an orphan who's not allowed to use his own wealth is always under the age, was a child.
So the
So,
parent and the children, parents would be then responsible for
yes, to
making
make
sure
sure that it's, if their children have wealth. So you have to pay it for children. The only people you don't pay zakat for is slaves. So in the past, slaves did own, as is proven by the fact that if a slave, breaks somebody's arm, it's not his owner who has to pay the blood money for that broken arm, it's actually the slave. So the slaves were allowed to have money. They were allowed to have possessions, which meant that you would have thought zakat would be due on them, but it's not. But there was one proviso with the wealth of a slave, is that their wealth is only theirs until or unless the owner decides that he wants to take it from them.
they could have this well at the end, it could just.
Yes. So the owner can do that for pure slaves, but not for slaves who have an element of freedom to them. So, for example, if he makes a slave what's called a mukatib, which is a slave who's paying off in installments to achieve his freedom, he can't take anything from that slave. Or a slave who he partially frees, say he's half free, maybe he's had a partner, the two of them owned a slave, and his partner freed the slave and then couldn't afford to free the other half because it's actually an obligation on that partner to then free the other half if he has the means. But if he couldn't afford it, then half of that slave is a slave and the other half is free. So you can't then take that money from that slave either. Although you could say that half of his time is yours and half of his time is his. So if he works, you divide his working hours into that, and then half of what he earns can go to you. These things we don't really have to deal with much. Yeah, we don't have to deal with that particularly very much at the moment. So alal asaghir, young children have to pay zakat. The amwalihim, in all of their types of wealth, whether that's ayn, cash, or harth, which is crops, or mashia, which is livestock, was zakat al-fitri, and they also have to pay zakat al-fitr. So this is something which we haven't mentioned yet. Zakat al-fitr is wajib. It's an obligation on people, not to the level of being fard, because you obviously it's not something you can make up once you miss the thing, in a sense. But it is an obligation on everybody who has any ability whatsoever to do it. So has that amount. Somebody who doesn't have the amount to pay zakat al-fitr wouldn't have to pay it. But anybody who does has to pay it, and you have to pay it on all of your dependents. So it's an obligation on you to pay it for yourself, and everybody whose nafaqah you have to sort out. So as a man, that would be his wife, might be his parents sometimes, children, newborn baby, but there's slaves. But even if a child is born in the hours leading up to the thing, you have to pay zakat al-fitr. So zakat al-fitr has to be paid for everyone. Zakat al-fitr being small amount, basically a sa', which is four muds of the muds of the Rasul sallallahu alaihi wasallam, which we work out basically. It needs to be paid in. This is the position of most of the madhabs. In fact, the cash position is a very weak position because it was. You they basically take the position you can give cash for anything, but zakat al-fitr was specifically mentioned in dates and barley and wheat and staples, so it should be given in these things. So if you don't have them, you buy them to give them in that. It's about just over 2 kilograms for things like rice and stuff like that, 2.2 maybe, somewhere a bit above two, over two. A slave does not have to pay zakat. Wala ala man fihi baqiyatu riq, nor upon any partial slave, any person who still has a bit of slavery in him, a bit of slavehood in him. So somebody who maybe has been promised to be freed upon the death of his owner. That's somebody who's considered to be partially free. Or somebody who has been made a mukatab, where he's maybe paid off three quarters of what he has to pay off and only has a quarter left. Or somebody who's born a child to their owner. They're basically considered to be have half semi-free, because the moment their owner dies, they are free. even if the child is born, stillborn in that particular instant. وَلَا زَكَاةَ عَلَى عَبْدٍ وَلَا عَلَى مَنْ فِيهِ بَقِيَةِ رِقٍّ فِي ذَلِكَ كُلِّهِ in any of these situations. فَإِذَا أُعْتِقَ if a slave is freed, again, this is something we don't have to consider now, but if a slave is given his freedom, as I said, slaves can own. So they may have, sometimes slaves are extremely rich because slaves were of different types. Some were given permission by their owners to trade on their own. And maybe they would, they might give a little bit to their owner as a result of this, but their owner was quite happy for them because if he took their money, they would stop trading and he would lose a lot more. So he would leave them to trade. They would get very, very wealthy in their own right. And then they might be freed. They might be set free. So they would have had maybe hundreds of dinars for 20 years. What happens when they... So when they were freed, what happens? He says, you start your year from the day you're free. You look at all your wealth. If you're above the level, then you start from the very day you're freed. If you're not, then you wait until you reach that level and then you start like anyone else. فليعتنف, he will start a hawlan, a year, min yawma idh, from the day he's freed, bima yamliku min mali, from for all of the wealth that's in his possession. Because basically when a slave is freed as well, unless the owner says, I exempt or exclude the slave's wealth, then all of the wealth automatically goes with the slave. Same applies when you sell a slave. All of the wealth goes with the slave when you sell a slave to somebody, unless you exclude it explicitly. So sometimes the owner would say, I'm selling the slave, but all of his wealth is mine, and you write that in the contract.
No.
Yeah.
He said, I'm freeing you.
But I'm taking your wealth. Then sometimes, yeah, if the slave was a highly skilled trader already, he'd say, oh, well, fine, I'll just make myself rich again. But that sometimes would have happened. He might have even said to the slave, look, you know, you pay me to free you, which is not exactly the same as mulkata, which is based on the slave's future earnings. The slave may have the money now to buy his own freedom. Even though the owner might be able to take it, he might prefer to do it that way to keep a good relationship with him afterwards. وَلَا زَكَاةَ عَلَىٰ أَحَدٍ فِي عَبْدِهِ وَخَادِمِهِ وَفَرَسِهِ وَدَارِهِ. You don't have to pay any zakat on any slaves that you own. An abd is the word for a male slave. A khadim, which literally means a servant, but is actually a word that's almost exclusively used in the books of fiqh to mean a female slave. There's also the word amatullah, which is used as a female slave. But when you see the word khadim, although it's a masculine word, it's usually used to mean a female slave. So there's no zakat on any male slaves that you own, or female slaves, or faras, any horses, or donkeys, or mules, farmyard animals like chickens. No? Camels, yes. He'll go in the section on that, but there's only what's called livestock that have zakat, and there are only specific, I think there's actually only six that are explicitly mentioned. وَلَا فِي دَارِهِ nor on his house, وَلَا مَا يَتَّخِذُ لِلْقُنْيَا nor for anything else that he takes for his own personal use, مِنَ الرِّبَاعِ of lands or estates, وَالْعُرُودِ or any other personal possessions apart from money, وَلَا فِي مَا يُتَّخَذُ لِلِبَاسٍ nor for anything else he takes to wear, مِنَ الْحُلْيِ of jewelry, except if it's forbidden for you. So for example, if a man buys gold bracelets and, you know, gold, anything else that he's not, men are allowed to have gold and certain specific things only, like their sword or their mushaf. That's pretty much it, I think. There's not many, very many other things that they're allowed to have gold in. So that would be considered to be a jewelry. So if you have that, and some people will have these things, even though there's a bit of disobedience to it, you'd have to pay zakat on that. I mean, you find a lot of men will wear sort of, you know, necklaces, silver necklaces. A lot of men you'll see wearing more than one ring. I mean, a lot of people do small things that are, and you're not going to, you know, attack somebody overly severely for that. But strictly speaking, they should only have The maximum jewelry they can have is one silver ring.
So no silver necklaces.
No, not for men. Women? Fine. Whatever. If you just want to wear gold and no clothes apart from gold, and you have a dress made of gold, I mean, yeah, with silk as well. Yeah. I mean, there are some exemptions with silk. They did allow silk in the battlefield because it kept you cool. And they did al allow certain types of horse silk for other reasons, but when somebody does it out of the rafaha, for something which is a luxury thing, you're not allowed, and there's no permissibility for it at all. Sometimes also there were garments that were made of half silk, so you have what's called the woof and the warp. We have the thick threads, and then you have all of the massive rides of thinner threads. When the thick threads are that wool, and then all of the massive amounts of other threads are not wool, I mean are not silk, then you can do that, and so on. Some it's called khaz. So some things are allowed of that sort of nature. So we will do one more little bit here, because that takes us to Ma'adin. وَمَنْ وَرِثَ أَرْضًا أَوْ وُهِبَ لَهُ أو رفع من أرضه زرعا فزكاه فلا زكاة عليه في شيء من ذلك. So if somebody inherits something or is given something which he's going to sell, trade something to sell, or he has land and he gets his wheat or his dates from his land, and then he immediately puts them into his shop to sell. So, I mean, in all of these cases, you pay zakat on the crop. When you say you have an orchard of dates and you get like a ton of dates, and you pay your zakat of a tenth on that ton of dates, and then you put it in your shop, and those dates remain in your shop for a couple of years, for example, or even for any length of time. Do you include that in your stock? That's the question here, or you. Yeah, but even if it's a year, let's say it's over a year later, would you include it in your stock then? No. In all of these cases, because you didn't buy it, it doesn't become stock. Stock is only something that you have bought with cash, not even a swap half most of the time. So فلا زكاة عليه في شيء من in any of these things, حتى يباع until they are sold, ويستقبل به حولا. من يوم يقبض ثمنه, until they are sold and a year has passed from the day that you take receipt of the price. So sometimes you will sell something and the person will not have to pay you for a year. You haven't taken receipt of the price until a year later. So you'd only start from the day you took receipt of the price, not even from the day of the sale. Is that clear? So anything, even if you have it in your shop, if you haven't bought it with cash, that's not stock that you pay zakat on every year. If you have a farm shop and it's come out of the ground, everything that you're selling, you wouldn't take all of that stuff in the farm shop and work out the value of it as zakat. You pay zakat on your harvest, on the things that zakat is due on, but you wouldn't pay zakat on anything in your farm shop, only on the cash that you get. Unless you're buying in things from elsewhere to put in your farm shop, like you don't grow bananas and you want bananas in your farm shop as well.
You have to separate because you might be both.
So you'd have to know which things come from your land and which things don't. With things that don't, you would include in your stock for zakat purposes. The things that come from your land, you wouldn't. Let me see. Yeah, I'll just do one more bit because then we'll stop at jizya. وفيما يخرج من المعدن من الذهب أو الفضة الزكاة. If something comes out of a mine and it is gold or silver, so a gold mine or a silver mine, the first thing we have to say is the way mines work in Islam. So basically, if there are mines, the mines are considered to be owned by the Muslims as a whole, unless there's one exception to this is, for example, when the land, the people come to Islam through a sulh, through a treaty. They come to under the control of the lands of Islam through a sulh, say the Dhimmis, and they have already own a mine, then that mine remains theirs. That's the one exception. Otherwise, all mines belong to the Muslims as a whole. But that doesn't mean the Muslims can go and take them. There's another factor here, is that only person who can decide who gets to use a mine, who has a concession for using a mine, is the leadership of the Muslims. So he would, what's called yaqta, he would give a concession to somebody for a particular period of time to use a particular mine or maybe just a particular vein within a mine. And then that would be that person's until that time ends or until that vein depletes. Yeah. Or maybe he would give a person a particular usage of a mine for his life. So then what happens with that claim, as I think they call it claims, when that person dies? Does it transfer to their heirs? No. It goes back to the government who decides what to do with it, or the ruler who decides what to do with it. It's important to know this. So mines are not really owned by anybody unless they owned them and made a treaty with the Muslims to keep them. That's the general rule. Well, then their future generations may become Muslim. Yeah. Yeah, well, it belongs. I mean, it's their property, so they could give it to their children, for example. Or if they become Muslim and something is yours, it remains yours. So here, if dhahab or fidda comes out of a mine, gold or silver, and again here there are different ways gold and silver comes out of mines. Usually, when gold and silver come out of a mine, they come out in the form of ore, and then you have to refine it in order to actually get the gold or the silver. This is what we're talking about here. Not when you go into a mine and you find like a big lump of gold in there, like a gold ore. That's got a different ruling attached to it. That's considered to be like buried treasure. So Malik differentiated between the two here. He considered mines to have zakat on it, whereas buried treasure had the fifth. It's considered to be the fifth. So it was like booty. But we'll come to buried treasure right at the end of this. So he says here, you have to pay zakat. And zakat, we know the rates for zakat, the rate on gold and the rate on silver. إِذَا بَلَغَ وَزْنَ 20 دِينَارًا, if the weight reaches 20 dinars. So the weight that you've taken out of the ground after you have refined it is equal to 86 grams, let's say. Then you pay immediately on everything that you've taken out. Yeah? You don't wait a year. You pay immediately. The moment you've taken out 20 dinars worth, you pay on the entire amount that you've taken out. If you take out 19 dinars, and then your vein depletes and there's nothing more there, you don't pay any zakat. Even if you then move on to a different one, you've given another concession somewhere, maybe even close by, but it's separate, then you start the process again. Maybe you only reach 19 there, and then you reach 19 there. You wouldn't pay zakat. Zakat is only on when it reaches 20, and then everything above that, you pay in the same way as you would if you had money. So if you have 21, you would pay a 40th of 21. If you have 22, a 40th of 22 in terms of the weight. Obviously, it's not exactly coins here, it's the weight. So it's 86 grams. Or the weight of khamsu awaq of fidda, of 200 dinars of dirhams of silver, which is 600 grams more or less. ففي ذلك ربع العشر يوم خروجه. On the day you extract 20 dinars or more, you pay a 40th. As I said, Imam Abu Hanifa said you pay a fifth on this. Yes. Imam Malik differentiated this. He said basically, in this particular thing, there's a lot of work involved. Even though it's, and basically, the reason why, again, that they didn't allow mines to be owned by people, because it leads to fitna, people fighting about about these sorts of things. If you get it all owned by the state, and then they can decide it, it stops one of the closes one of the doors to fitna, basically. وَكَذَٰلِكَ فِيمَا يُخْرَجُ بَعْدَ ذَٰلِكَ مُتَّصِلًا بِهِ. And everything else that comes after it is connected to that. It has the same ruling. وَإِنْ قَلْ, even if it's a little. So if it's 21 dinars, as I said, you do a 40th. It's 22 dinars, it's a 40th, and so on. فَإِنْ انْقَطَعَ نَيْلُهُ, if his vein depletes and there's nothing more to be taken from it, بِيَدِهِ, that he has been given, وَابْتَدَأَ غَيْرَهُ, and he moves on to a different one. So by a vein here means you have to up your, you not if they're like physically connected. So you have one thing that looks like a vein and then immediately goes into another one. That's considered to be one. But if you actually have to take up your tools and go elsewhere, then you've considered to be gone to a different place. If you start with a different one, لَمْ يُخْرِجْ شَيْئًا حَتَّى يَبْلُغَ مَا فِيهِ زَكَاةً. You do not pay any zakat until you reach the level of zakat again. You start again. So I will finish there because the next section is jizya. Is there any questions on any of this, or is it clear? We get that there is the other thing of buried treasure, which we'll come to after jizya, inshallah. Any questions? In zakat in general, any questions? As I said, there are some difficulties, especially with wages. So my suggestion when it comes to wages is that although you have many different dates, with modern computer systems, that's not that complicated. The complicated thing is working out what money you've spent. Have you spent from the one you've had from a year, or have you spent from the one you've had for a month? So if people have savings accounts, when they know when they put things in there, then that's one way of doing it. If they don't have savings accounts, then my suggestion is that you assume that you've spent from the money you've had the longest. When you just bundle all your money together in one account and you've had it come into that account over a long period of time, and you don't know which, you can't separate the money from the money. When you're spending money in that account, you assume you've spent it from the thing you've had the longest. So if you're getting £1,000 every month and you're spending money, £500 every month, you don't assume that 500 is coming out from this month's 1,000. It's from the one you had the longest. That's my suggestion in order to work out to get past that particular obstacle.
And so, for example, if you
Unless you explicitly intend it to come out of this month's one, and because you're saving the previous month's one.
but for example, if you had a savings account, then
You know when it's come in, yeah.
you know, but then you would owe
Been there for a
you
year.
spent.
You would owe zakat on the moment you. So let's say you have a savings account. This is all your money, and every month, let's do the in dinars. So let's say you're putting in 10, 20 dinars each month, because we know zakat's on 20 dinars, and you're never dropping. So first month you put 20, the second month you put 20, the third month you put 20. The account after 5 months has got 100 dinars. And then you don't put anything in until the next year, but you don't take anything out. So when you come to that first month where you reach the 20, where you put in the 20, you pay zakat on 20. When you come to the next month, when you put in the second 20, you pay zakat on the next 20. And then the next 20 and the next 20.
Each lot, you've got to wait a year
Yeah.
and it's got to not be spent. And then
Yes. If you've spent of any of them, then I said that's when it becomes complicated to work out what you've spent from. So if you have 100, and then say let's say 3 months later you spend 50 dinars, so the next when you come to the month, you've actually got 50 dinars in your account. How long has that 50 dinars been in there? That's where it comes to complicated. Have you spent that 50 dinars from the stuff that you put in last, or the stuff you put in first? So that's why I'm saying just make the assumption, unless you explicitly intend the opposite, that you spend it from what you has been in the longest, in order to make it easier. All right, well, we'll finish there, inshallah. بسر وبركاته. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم، الحمد لله رب العالمين، الرحمن الرحيم، مالك يوم الدين، اياك نعبد واياك نستعين، اهدنا الصراط المستقيم، صراط الذين انعمت عليهم غير المغضوب عليهم ولا الضالين، امين. اللهم صل على سيدنا محمد عبدك ورسولك النبي الامي وعلى اله وصحبه وسلم تسليما. سبحان ربك رب العزه عما يصفون، وسلام على المرسلين، والحمد لله رب العالمين. See you next week, inshallah. Hopefully we will finish zakat then.